You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
If you know me, somewhat personally, I'm sort of a detail-oriented kind of guy. Sometimes details are like something that I'm interested in. That's a rare occasion, but I tend to be a detail-oriented kind of guy. I tend to be a neat freak, that creates some frustration, I'm sure, for the people around me. And there's some good things about that too. I want you to know, like, you appreciate the fact that I'm a neat freak. I'm a detail guy because there's things that you would only notice if I didn't do what I do. And if I'm not who I am, you would notice those things because there'd be a little more chaos. But that's who I am. It's part of my, I don't know, personality, my makeup, my psychology, whatever. And so I like to do things in an orderly fashion. I like things to make sense, to fit. I like 1 and 1 to equal 2, and I can handle that math there. As a matter of fact, we were in Pittsburgh this weekend, and I forgot my black belt. And I don't mean my karate black belt. I mean my actual belt that was black. And my shoes were black, not brown. And it bothered me so much to this point where I kept my shirt down here like this. I would hold it a lot so the people wouldn't see that my brown belt didn't match my black shoes. Now, some of you would be like, that's not just detail-oriented. That's just messed up. But that's okay because I'm that too. So I'm cool with all of it. But some of you may be detail-oriented people too. And there's all sorts of terms for this. And whether that's anal retentive, you know, whatever you want to call it that. Obsessive-compulsive, which, you know, it's technically not really that. That's a disorder that's a little bit deeper than that. But I like detail. I like things arranged. I like things that matter. And there's some things that really bother me. Okay, like one thing is this. This bothers me. Not that. This. That. That bothers me. Even if you didn't put these in front of me and say, Sean, I want you to do something about this. If we were having a conversation, and not to be rude or disrespectful, but we could be having a serious conversation about like death or marriage or something like that. And I probably still would be rearranging them, not even knowing that I'm doing it, and would be making sure that all the pencils are facing the right way, all of the ones that are sharpened would all be at one end, and they would, of course, line up. So this just irks me, okay? And maybe it irks you, maybe it doesn't bother you, maybe you're cool with that, and that's okay, because God can use you too. So don't give up, even though that doesn't matter to you. It's good. There's other things that bother me. Like, this kind of bothers me a lot. It's in the package. That's just frustrating that it's turned there. Okay, this is just annoying to me. Come on, people. If you're going to make it, and we were in Pittsburgh, I took a picture of the Heinz factory. But this one here, like, is it that hard to make them? And I understand they're now upside down so that it comes out easier and all that. But really, like, why couldn't you make the relish match? Like, that kind of stuff, that bothers me a little bit. Okay, this one is an annoying one, too. It's not that hard to make this right. Put the cover in the right spot. Similarly is the next one here. That one, like, there's the reason the line was painted that way. You just turn it that way. It's a circle. It's not hard to figure out. Okay, this stuff. Now, I like to do construction. I enjoy working on my home. And I've done multiple floors in my home, tile floors, finished wood floors and things like that. And this next one is like, there's like a line between detail-oriented, neat freak, and then there's just sloppy, crappy work. And this is what bothers me. When you see this kind of stuff, I don't know if you can see it from there, but you see the 1, 2, 3, the third set of tiles in is not lined up. It is not that hard to fix this one, people. That's just, yeah, okay. Then the same related thing. This drives me nuts. And this happens, and I don't know, do you see that one there? Like, honestly, what I really want to know is what's going on in the mind of the person doing this. Like, are they like, oh, no. Or are they like, hey, I'm going to mess with Sean. Bloop. You know, not to give you too much of my personal details, but there's nothing like sitting on the toilet and staring at the tile and seeing that the tiles don't line up. Like, that stuff just drives me nuts, okay? Okay, anyway, then there's the same kind of thing here, and this is, again, I don't know if you can see it on your screen, but all the way back there, that one's over there. There must be a reason. There must be a reason. I don't know what to say about that. And honestly, if I hired someone to do that, and I saw that, I'd be like, tear up the floor and fix it. And it's probably wrong that I would say something like that. And like, get over it. It's not that big of a deal. But it's just like, I would kind of like try to saw away with my file and see if I can pop the tile over. That kind of stuff definitely bothers me. And then there's this. If you've ever flown before, or I guess they have these on trains as well. Like, if it's going to be right, it's going to be centered. Okay? This is the tray table on the back of a plane seat. Like, again, I could be talking to you about serious things going flip, 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 making sure that they're all straight, making sure it's lined up. That's, again, detail-oriented. It's pushing lines into psychotic and crazy. But again, there's good things about this. But that one bothers me. Then there's this one. I don't know if you've seen this kind of thing. But there's the multi-pack of M&Ms. Sorry about the focus. But if you notice this one here, there's a green one in with the teal ones or the aqua color. I don't know what color that is. But the light blue ones. And so, yeah, if I got that pack, I would have to eat that one first. And some of you would see me with that pack and then go, and dump them because you're mean. But God still can use you too. Okay, you think I'm being funny about this. Sometimes I exaggerate things a little, but these things bother me. But this one is like, what do I do? What do I do? because I could go to 40 even, but then it would be more than 10 gallons. And it just totally, honestly, if you look at my gas receipts, they all are like 20.02. Or it'll be like 14.14 or 14 even. It's just, or I can do a palindrome, be like 14.41. She's totally laughing. I know, thank you, honey. But like, how much should I put in? Kendra's like, oh, put $20 in it. I'm like, okay. 20.01. Well, that doesn't work. 20.02. Okay. All right, we're cool. So that kind of stuff. I'm a detail kind of guy, and if you want to talk to your elders and ask that I be removed, that's fine too. But there's some good things about this every once in a while. And then there's this kind of stuff. Then it comes to the to-do list. I like to-do lists. I like to have lists to do. And I came across this list online, and it's like, it's just insanity. It just drives me a little bit batty. So closet color coordinated. Now, I'm not going to share with you. Our closet doesn't have doors, so people walk into our bedroom and will see our open closet. And a closet that are, Roy G. Biv's, red, orange, yellow, the spectrum. If it's just shading and fade, it looks very clean and professional. So perhaps my closet may be color coordinated and organized based on color. Perhaps. But I wouldn't, that's weird. Like, what crazy people do that stuff. Food pantry alphabetized, I'm not in charge of the pantry. So that one is good. Shoelaces, same length, always. That kind of stuff. And my kids are like, hey, Dad, can you tie my shoe? And there's like this nub here and the other end is all frayed and the aglet. If you want to know, that's a little fancy thing that goes on the end of your shoelace. If the aglet is gone and broken, that bothers me. So I'll be like, oh, yeah, sure. Hold on a second. I'll take the shoe off, straighten the laces, get some tape, and wrap it up. Okay, good. We're good to go. All right. And then I lace it. And then there's this. Last box left unchecked. What do you do there? Detail people. And you're all looking at me weird. But there's people in this room going, oh, that doesn't bother me. I'm okay with this. Do you check the last box? If you're not, what do you do? But I like lists. I like to have a to-do list. I'm a busy guy, and it helps having a list of knowing what to do next. So there's important things. There's value in having to-do lists. But I'm the kind of guy, too, that I'm like, okay, I've got to do this thing, this thing, this thing, this thing. And then I go over and I'm like, okay, let me fix the music. Well, that wasn't on my list. Write it on the list. Check. Fix the music. He doesn't do that. People don't do. Yeah, I do. I do that all the time. My to-do list in the morning and my to-do list in the afternoon are probably two totally different sizes. It's like doubled by the end of the day because I'm like, well, I'm going to get credit for that one. You know, I did that, a credit check, you know, and then other times I'll be like, you know, clean the house. That's way too generic for just one checkbox. You know, you got to break that down into pieces, you know. Plug in the vacuum, check. Move the vacuum over to the living room, check. You know, like that, and yeah, maybe that's a little crazy. But to-do lists are important. There's a good thing about to-do lists. And if you don't have a to-do list, you probably on some level, you know, you need to have a to-do list, maybe not on paper, but at least in terms of what are your priorities. Because that's what a to-do list is all about. It's these are things that are important. These are things that need to be accomplished. These are some things that need to be done. And it's easy. Again, maybe you are like, you know, always about the, you have a perfect memory and you're always, okay, focus, and you can get things done right away. And honestly, if you're not interested in making a to-do list, you're probably not that person that's focused on one thing. But anyway, it gives you kind of this sense of priority and what needs to be done first. And if you're a to-do list person, if you're an organized kind of person, there's also this sense where, you know, I've got my to-do list. And I do. I generally have it in order of priority, and I know that's not as perfect as it should be. But I do. I will highlight something in red. It's on Evernote. It's digital. I'll highlight it in red, or I'll make it bold because that's extra important. If you don't do that, the house will explode. You know, if you don't do that, someone is going to be forgotten and left behind at the church or something like that. You know, you have to. Those are the important things. But I find, and again, if you're a to-do list person, if you're not, yeah, hopefully this will still make sense, but I find that my to-do list, the list of things that are a priority, the list of things that matter on paper, let's just say paper, tends to be different by the end of my day. And I'm not just talking about adding things to get credit, but in terms of like what I want to accomplish and what actually happens are sometimes very different. And for my personality, that's extremely frustrating. I mean, honestly, and it's probably there's some sin in here, honestly. Not having a to-do list is sin, but I find my value and worth sometimes based on how many checks are on my to-do list. And then if I don't do some things, like I might have had a moment where people are like, you know, we were on the verge of divorce and our marriage came back together, and because of what you said, I was going to kill myself, and now I'm better. And I could have all those things, and I'd be like, yeah, but I didn't get that room swept. So my to-do list didn't have that check there. So that's where it can become an issue and a problem. But the idea of having a list of priorities and what actually happens, I think is something that is important for us to realize. As we are doing this series, you know, we're talking about Jesus being better than. And the first week we said that Jesus is better than what did we say? Our goals, our future. Jesus is better than our success. There we go. Jesus is better than success. And we talked about how, you know, we could be succeeding in something and not really mattering, and how Paul considered everything that he had achieved, which were great successes, really amounted to a bunch of crap. Literally. Like, that's what the word. And then the second week, we talked about how pursuing money, and how money, you know, we think that we're the ones providing it. We think it's up to us to make sure we have enough. We think that it's up to us to make sure we have more than enough. But really, it comes down to God is the one that's providing. And I have people in this room that could probably amen that right now because of some crazy things that have happened over the last couple of weeks about God providing. But it's God's money. It's His thing. He's the one providing. And so pursuing Jesus is better than pursuing money. And lastly, we talked about that challenging thing about pursuing Jesus is better than pursuing family, and how family is important, but it still has to be second to Jesus. And so this is kind of a wrapping up the whole thing. And this idea of having a to-do list, what, you know, we have what we want to accomplish. So there's what we want to accomplish. Then there's what we actually accomplish. And I'd like to kind of throw out here, what does God want our priorities to be? What does God want to be at the top of our to-do list? And not just on paper, but in actuality. And if you hadn't figured it out with a series called Better Than, I mean, the point is that Jesus wants Jesus to be at the top of our to-do list, that Jesus is our priority. And so the point that I want you to get this week is that pursuing Jesus is better than pursuing me, pursuing what I want, what my desires are, because Jesus' plans for me are better than mine. And, you know, I'm speaking in the first person there, so we could make it third person to make it easier if you're following it. Pursuing Jesus is better than pursuing you, because Jesus' plans for you are better than your plans. And this idea, the understanding that Jesus needs to be at the top of our to-do list, at the top of our priorities. And, you know, a lot of times we use post-it notes to make notes, to make, okay, don't forget to do that. And, you know, sometimes you might have 16 post-it notes everywhere that says, don't forget this and don't forget that. And so we use post-it notes sometimes as a priority. And you've got one on your seat, and we'll come back to this later. You're going to need a pen or a pencil or a crayon or a marker or something for that. And so if we're going to turn the lights on here. If you need a pen or pencil, you'll need that later. Just kind of put your hand up, and David will make sure you guys get a pen or pencil. We'll kind of cover that now so it doesn't affect things later. So we'll come back to this idea. But understand that the point, anybody need a pen or pencil? Go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll get you a pen or pencil here. But I want you to get this idea that that our own desires, our own priorities, our us doesn't matter compared to Jesus. No matter how important you think something needs to be on the top of your to-do list, if Jesus isn't the priority, the rest of it doesn't matter. And if Jesus is written at the top of your to-do list, but you never actually get to check it off, then it doesn't matter either. So, and here's what I wrote. I said, ultimately, our own wants, dreams, desires, and get this, even our life itself, even your life itself doesn't matter when it comes to following Jesus. So, and as we said the first week, this is not an easy series, and each week gets harder and harder and harder. And as we look at this passage, it is a challenging passage. But I want to look at this idea of what it means to pursue Jesus rather than pursue ourselves. And again, I'm not just talking about, you know, 100% narcissism, egotism. Like none, you know, you might not be that kind of person, but if that's the case, understand that it's not that big of a deal. Like, we're not talking about that kind of thing. We are talking about what it means to anything, like to put ourselves in front. And we'll get to that in a second. So the lights are going to come on. And if you can look at, we're going to be in Luke chapter 14. And look at this passage here as we talk about this passage. And some of this should sound familiar because some of the same concepts we talked about actually, a number of those passages we're looking at this week are bringing pieces together from what we've talked about over the last month. But this is Jesus. He is talking. Well, as you see here in the context, a large crowd was following Jesus. And he turned around and said to them, if you want to be my disciple, you must hate everyone else by comparison. Your father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even your own life. Otherwise, you cannot be my disciple. And if you do not carry your own cross and follow me, you cannot be my disciple. But don't begin until you count the cost. For who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money. And then everyone would laugh at you. They would say, there's the person who started that building and couldn't afford to finish it. And he goes on and says, or what king would go to war against another king without first sitting down with his counselors to discuss whether his army of 10,000 could defeat the 20,000 soldiers marching against him? And if he can't, he will send a delegation to discuss terms of peace while the enemy is still far away. So you cannot become my disciple without giving up everything you own. And so I want to kind of break this down and chew on this. And again, this is hard stuff. It's easy for us to say, well, I'm not that bad. This isn't a big deal to me. But I just want us to kind of look in a little bit deeper and say, if there is any of a deal, it might not be a big deal, but if there's any piece of us that has us on the top of the to-do list over Jesus, then it's a big deal. Then we need to address it. Then we need to look in and say, you know, what is that? And again, we'll come back to this idea. But the first thing I want you to see in this passage when it comes to putting together, to reordering our to-do list, Because again, we might, and if you're here, you know, if this is your first time ever in church, or you've spent your life, you know, around people that have just been judgmental Christians and, you know, obnoxious, you know, maybe you're like, I don't want anything to do with Jesus, and I'm just sitting here because it's warm. I don't know. And maybe it's not that either. But you know, that might be your issue. But I would suspect that most of you in this room at least say, yeah, Jesus is important. Jesus matters to me. And I think we have this idea that, yeah, Jesus is at the top of my to-do list, and he might be in red and in bold and underlined. But each day, there's never the check in that box. Because we want him to be the priority, but we don't actually make it happen. And that's the issue that I want us to chew on. I want us to kind of deal with here. And so I want to talk about reordering your to-do list. Hey, it's working today. All right, cool. Reordering to-do list. So the first thing I want you to see in this passage here is that Jesus isn't about stardom. Jesus is not interested in celebrity status. Jesus isn't interested in us following him because it's the cool thing to do, because it's the popular thing to do. And I don't think this is the case, and I wouldn't want to even pretend to be that arrogant. But if you're here at MC3 because you're like, oh, that's the cool church, they got the black walls, and that's why you're here, please leave. Because it's not about being popular, it's not about being cool, it's not about being a celebrity, it's not about fitting in with the people around you. That is not the point. And that's what Jesus says here in verse 25. And it's just a little thing, but it says, a large crowd. Was following Jesus. He turned around and said to them, and that's it. Understand the context of what's going on here is that Jesus wasn't just talking to his 12, to the disciples. He wasn't hanging out with just John and Peter and James. He wasn't even just talking to a bunch of people that were, you know, his official followers. You know, there's just a large crowd. And if you look through the Gospels and you kind of read the story, again, we've talked about this in the past, there's sort of a shift in how Jesus deals with the people following him. But a lot of people were following him because they were sick and wanted to be healed. Because they were lame. Well, I guess they weren't following him, but someone was helping them follow him, and they wanted to walk. You know, there were people that were just wanting to see him miracle, do some miracling. And, you know, so there were people that were coming not because they truly wanted to follow him, but they wanted to be a part of his celebrity status. They wanted to get something from him. And we're not talking about the process of evangelism here and reaching people for Christ. That's not what we're talking about. But, you know, there's a point to, hey, we're going to give you something you need, and then we'll tell you what you really need. So I'm not discounting the fact that Jesus was healing people and that people shouldn't have followed him for that reason. But what I am saying is that Jesus understood that there were people following him just because, like, yeah, I'm in. Everybody's following Jesus. Hey, did you hear Jesus in town? Cool, let's go. Let's see what he's going to do. This is cool. I want to follow him. And Jesus recognizes that and stops and turns around and says to them. And now the Greek word is an interesting phrase, and I'm not going to build a case on this, but the word turn around sometimes means, hey, just literally turning around. But the word also has to do with this idea of changing course. And changing direction. And I wonder, and again, I don't know enough. I don't know exactly what Luke was thinking when he wrote this. But it's an interesting play on this Greek word, which is strepho, in case you care. But it also means to change course. And so I wonder if, because you'll see that Jesus is changing course here. That if he is making this kind of a play on words where he is about to say, you know what? It's time to get real. It's time to stop with the popularity thing. It's time to stop with the stardom thing. You guys are just following me because it's the neat thing to do, because you think it'll be fun, because it'll look good on your, you know, your application for that job. Maybe you want to get into honor society and you have to do church service, all right, religious instruction. You know, Jesus is like, no. It's time to change what you're thinking. It's time to stop and realize and just take a moment to say, why are you following Jesus? And that's what's going on here. He realizes there's this huge crowd. So get that. He's not talking to his disciples. He's not talking to the 12, to the close people that get it, if you will. I mean, we know that they didn't all get it, and we know we don't all get it. But, you know, you have Peter doing stupid things all the time. But he was talking to just the whole crowd and said, look, guys, you need to understand what's going on. And so there was a moment here where he physically turns around, and maybe he's even changing course to say, look, guys, I know there's a huge crowd here, but if you're following me because of the celebrity, because of the stardom, because this is the good thing to do, this is the right thing to do, it gets some religion in you, you know, like whatever our kind of lame, shallow issues are, Jesus is saying, this is not, I'm not about a lame, shallow issue. I am not about simple stardom or celebrity status or popularity. And so so just that statement is a huge thing because he's changing. He's about to stop and make a change here. He's turning around to the crowd that's following him and says, look, I'm not about stardom. So if you're here, if you understand, if you think you're following me because it's about a cool thing to do or your friends will like you better, that's not the point. That's not the goal. So when it comes to reordering your to-do list, you need to understand that Jesus isn't about stardom. The second thing is that Jesus isn't about selfishness. Selfishness. Jesus isn't about selfishness. And this is the idea here of the me, of the what do I want? What are my goals? What are my desires? And Jesus is about to just, again, drop the mic, just not spit in your face. He did that, actually. Anyway, but that was to heal the guy's eyes. But anyway, you know, he's... If you're following me, you understand why you're following me. This is what he says in verse 6. I'll let Jesus say it, but he does a better job than I do. He says, if you want to be my disciple, and again, there's this word, mathetes, the Greek word means a follower, one that is following a rabbi, a teacher. And we talked all about this again. I said this last week and the week before, too. But we talked about this the very first week of Inside MC3. You can go to mc3church.org and listen to that and learn about what it means to be a true follower, a disciple of Jesus. So he says, if you want to be a follower of me, a Christ follower, you must hate. No, Jesus, he doesn't mean hate. You know, we tell our kids, you don't hate them. You just strongly dislike them. No, I hate them. No. You love them less. You know, we say this kind of thing. We don't want our kids talking about hating. So Jesus must not have meant the word hate. He must have, they translated it. It meant, like, you know, instead of giving them 17 flowers, you give them 13 flowers. No. The word here is misio. And I don't know if it's related to misery, but the word means to hate, to be hated, to be detestable. It is not a soft, easy, rainbows and pixie dust kind of word. It is an intentional, hard word. And Jesus says, if you want to follow me, you must hate everyone else by comparison. Your father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters. Now, I'm not going to talk about that because we did that last week. But he says, compared to your love for me, compared to your obedience, your followership of me, you need to hate those people by comparison. And again, last week we talked about that. Well, isn't family important? Yes. But should it be more important than Jesus? Never. So, and then he goes on and says, you must hate your father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters. Yes, even your own life. Hate myself? Well, that doesn't sound very Dr. Phil. What? Hate myself? I'm supposed to love me and give me hugs every morning and go Stuart Smalley on my mirror. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. I'm doggone at people like me. And if you don't know what that is, it's because you're not old like me. But this idea of, what do you mean hating your own life? Yes, hating your own life. That Jesus should be so important that what happens to me doesn't matter. That what I want doesn't count. That my desires do not compare. And as we talked the first week, that my successes are really just crap in comparison. That is what Jesus is saying here. He said, if you want to follow me, if you call yourself a Christ follower, you need to hate everyone, including your own self, your own lives. And he says, otherwise, you cannot be my disciple. Now, Jesus isn't saying, you know, go out and everybody kill themselves. It's not the point. As we said last week, he wasn't saying, you know, leave your wife, leave your husband, leave your kids, go follow me. No, he's just saying, in comparison, how much of me, how much of I influences my relationship with Jesus? And Jesus is saying, look, compared to me, you should hate your own life. You should hate your own life. Otherwise, you cannot be my disciple. So he says here that Jesus isn't about stardom. Jesus isn't about selfishness. And the third thing is that Jesus isn't about safety. And I think there's a lot of challenging things right now, and we'll talk about this in a little bit. I understand this whole ISIS thing and the refugee thing is a complicated issue. And there's a lot of factors involved, and frankly, you and I don't have a clue about most of them. But I will say, as followers of Jesus, be careful that right off the bat you don't assume that safety is Jesus' first priority for you. You know, again, I'm not saying there's a right or wrong answer to this, that I know the right or wrong answer, but if we're right away saying, no, we need to protect ourselves, let's look what Jesus says in verse 27. He says, if you do not carry your own cross and follow me, you cannot be my disciple. So what does that mean? Like wearing some gold chain around your neck? You know, something like that, carrying your cross? No, this is a phrase, probably that Jesus was crucified. He was killed, executed on a cross. And the way this process took place as part of what it meant to be executed was that the person that was going to die would carry their cross through town. And we know, you know, again, if you're familiar with the Good Friday story or there's a thing you can do, the walks of the cross, I forget what it's called, stations of the cross, if you've ever heard about that kind of thing, it's walking through kind of those last hours of Jesus' life where he's carrying his own cross. And that's the way execution took place. That's the way it happened. And the cross, it was designed, it was the perfect method for death. It really was, if you were a cruel, heartless, person that wanted to cause some problems. First of all, it was humiliating. Because they were executed naked. They were put on display for everyone. You know, we like the loincloth. It's appropriate. We don't want to be, but we think of, we see the crucifixion and yeah, he's not wearing, he's got a loincloth on. But most of the time it wasn't even that much. It was naked. It was humiliating. You had to walk through the town carrying this cross because you were on your way to die. And people would mock you. They would spit on you. They would make fun of you. And that was totally acceptable. You know, now there's all sorts of discussion about how we execute people in the States, and that's a whole other package I'm not going to open up. But I know that even in that, they're like, this drug that we use can actually cause them to feel some pain for a little bit, for a few seconds before they die. So maybe we need to switch over to this drug for execution. That was not on the Romans' minds by any means. They're like, oh, this causes pain and you die quickly? Oh, well, then let's find another way so you die slowly. And so it was designed as this humiliating way. It was torture. It has been considered one of the most torturous, is that a word? The torturousest methods of death ever devised by man. Because, and again, I've talked about this before, I'm not going to spend too much time, but the short version is your shoulders were dislocated when you were hanging on the cross, and you would have to pull yourself up pulling against nails, in order to exhale. You could inhale all you wanted, but the way it did this thing with your lungs, you had to do that in order to... Wait, I was breathing in. Anyway, and so you asphyxiated to death. And it was awful because the only way you didn't die is by pulling up against the pain, and that's why they would break their legs. And that's a whole, again, lots of interesting things that were done and why it all happened that way with Jesus. Because if your legs are broken, you couldn't push up against your legs, so you were relying on your arms. Eventually, your strength gave out and you died. And so it was that way. It was torture, and of course, it was execution. It was designed to kill people. And so Jesus is saying, look, the most heinous way of death devised by man, that's what we need to be doing when it comes to following Jesus. He says, if you're in this because you think it's going to be easy, because it's going to be safe, because it's going to be perfect, and you get to be comfy and cozy, he said, you're in the wrong boat, large crowd. You're following the wrong guy. Because you need to, if you want to follow me, you're going to take up your cross. You need to count as if you are dead. Consider yourself, this is it. It doesn't matter. My life doesn't matter. And you need to be willing to put up with the humiliation. You might be humiliated for following Jesus. And if you're like, well, I don't want people to make fun of me, then don't follow him. You need to be willing to put up with perhaps even torture, even physical torture, even death. And again, we are in a country that is safe for the most part. We have freedoms, and those are all incredible things. But what if we weren't? Which is the priority? Jesus or our safety? And if it comes to choosing between the two, what are you going to choose? Because Jesus says, if you're not willing to take up your cross, to count yourself dead, to be willing to put up with the torture, the pain, the execution, the potentially the death, then you can't be my disciple. You can't follow me. So stop the posing. Stop the faking. And so that's the second thing here is that Jesus, or the third thing, Jesus isn't about safety. So Jesus, when it comes to this to-do list idea, you know, we say Jesus is at the top, but understand that if Jesus is at the top of your list and you're following him because it's popular, because it's fun, because it's cool, maybe because you'll get something out of it. Hey, if I go to that church long enough, maybe they'll do something for me. Or you know, if I can be in charge at that church, that's why I want to go there. And I'm just making a church that's way bigger than this. Please don't miss that. But if you're doing it, if you're following Jesus and you're like, yeah, well, I'm doing this, but I want this. This is my goal. You know, when I'm 30, this is what's going to have happened. And when I'm 40, this is what's going to happen. And Jesus says, look, it's not about you. And then he says, it's not about safety either. If you're thinking that you're going to follow me and be comfortable and safe and easy, then you're following the wrong guy. And again, I don't know how much you guys know about the church in China, which is totally persecuted, but is one of the largest on fire, thriving churches, because they're underground. The church isn't the building, it's the people in the world. And that's because they don't have safety and security. So, you know, don't be too quick to be like, oh, this is right and this is wrong. So understand that if you're following Jesus and these are the other things are more important, Jesus says, no, stop. You cannot be my disciple. And then he wraps it up by saying, so think it over. So before you start following me, he turns to the large crowd and say, look, before you guys start following me, understand these are some givens. I'm not the popular guy. I'm not the guy that you can follow because it'll make your life better and things are going to be perfect. It's not about safety. It's about considering yourself dead, hating your own desires, hating yourself. He says, so think it over. And then he shares two little illustrations. He says, but don't begin until you count the cost. Just know what you're getting into here. Before you start following, before you start coming after me, understand what you're getting into. Because for who would begin, he shares a story, who would begin construction without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? If you're going to do a project, if you're going to build something, if you're going to add an addition to your house, or if you're going to remodel something, or you're going to look and say, okay, can I afford this? Can I make it happen? And if you do that, that's wise. And you're like, okay, yeah, I can afford this. This is a good thing. You're going to calculate the cost. Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money. And then everyone would laugh at you. And, you know, we've seen that before. People start building and they're like, oh, that's going to be the new. And then it stays the coming soon for years, you know, whatever. And he says, you know what, you're not going to do that. Most people are practical enough to say, hey, before I get into this, can I afford it? Before I do this, do I have the supplies that are needed? Before I get into this, can I make it happen? He says, if not, you know, you'll run out of money. It's not even done. Everyone's going to laugh at you. And they say, there's the person who started that building and couldn't afford to finish it. Fool. Idiot. So he says, before you get into this, make sure you think about it. Or he says, let me share another story. He says, what king, you know, maybe you're not into construction. Maybe you're into world domination. What king would go to war against another king? And again, this is in their context. They understood that a king was the one in charge. They were the commander-in-chief. They were the boss. They were the ones that decided what would happen. And they said, what king would go to a war against another king without first sitting down? And the Greek word here, sitting down, is kathizo. And it's a really interesting word. It means to sit down, to stay, to rest. It kind of has the idea of a pause button. He says, before you jump into this, just sit down for a second. Hold on here. Wait a second. If you're going to follow me, take a moment to just reflect on this. Sit down and decide if this is worth it. And he said, a king that's going to war is going to sit down with his counselors. And he's going to discuss whether his army of 10,000 can defeat the 20,000 soldiers marching against him. And that's interesting. And I don't have time to unpack all that. But, you know, right there on paper, and I can even figure out this math, that's a losing battle. So there must be something going on here where this king can either see that there's potential, or, as he goes on, he says, if he can't beat these soldiers against him, he'll send a delegation to discuss the terms of peace while the enemy is still far away. He says, you're not going to jump into something that you know is going to cause problems without first thinking through, wait a second. 27. We're short a couple guys. No, and when you realize that, you're going to say, this isn't good. Let's make peace with them. We like them. I like your hat. Your crown is pretty cool. So let's make terms of peace. He says, you're going to do that. Kings will do that. Builders will do that. People will do that. We will think through what we're going to do before we do it, usually. And of course, I'm sure we all can share stories of when we haven't and we've messed up something. We failed. We made a poor choice, whatever. And so Jesus is saying, look, if you're going to follow me, think it through here, because understand what it's going to take. This isn't a popularity contest. This isn't a joke. He says, if you cannot become my disciple without giving up everything you own, are you willing to give it up, give all of it up? And this you own phrase, giving up everything you own, doesn't just mean your money and stuff that we talked about 2 weeks ago. It has the idea of everything that belongs to you, everything that you consider valuable. And that could be family, that could be money, that could be stuff, that could be your dreams, your desires, your own life for the sake of following Jesus. So that's the thing here. It says, we might have Jesus on our to-do list, but are we truly, Jesus is basically saying, is he really the top of your to-do list? Are you really interested in getting into this thing when it comes to reordering your to-do list? Because he's not about stardom. He's not about selfishness. He's not about safety, so think it over. And so that's the kind of the question that's floating out with us when we talk about this idea of being better than and how Jesus, pursuing Jesus is better than pursuing me, because what God wants for me is better than anything that I can come up with. And that's the kind of the underlying current of this passage. Says, if you're going to follow me, yeah, it's going to be uncomfortable and you're going to have to hate yourself and you might give up your safety, but you know what? It's going to be worth it. But don't jump into this half-hearted. Don't jump into this if you're not really willing to do what it takes to follow. And so that's what he's saying, that when it comes to us, so we need to decide, is Jesus the top of our to-do list? Is he the number one priority? And not just in terms of we want him to be, but is he for reals at the top? Are we truly following him? And Jesus said, just take some time to think about that. So, Just again, to kind of break this down, I said I would make it a little bit more practical here. When it comes to following Jesus, to do or not to do, what does it really mean? I know that I want to follow Jesus, and he says I need to consider all this before I follow him. What does that look like on a practical level? Well, if Jesus is at the top of your to-do list, you will have to give up some things. The first thing that you're going to have to give up is your wants. What do you want? And I don't mean like, I want that Lamborghini. I mean like, right now, what do you want? I want to get out of here so I can eat lunch. Okay, that is a want. What are the things that you are looking forward to? Would you be willing to give up those things that you want? Whether it's purchase type things, whether it's I want a better marriage, I want good kids. I want a good job. I want to have a nice house. I want to have a full belly. I want to enjoy that ice cream sundae. There's so many things that we want, and whether we are, really think through them on a practical, thinking it through level, but there's so many things you want. Are you willing to give up your wants? And that's what Jesus says in another passage in Luke, very similar kind of concept. He's saying to the people around him, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves. Deny, giving it up. Same context, same passage here, or Luke's version of this kind of whole thing in another spot. Take up your cross daily and follow me. We looked at this a couple weeks ago. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. Whoever loses their life for me will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet lose or forfeit their very self? So you need to be willing. If you're going to follow Jesus, you need to give it up. Are you willing to give up what you want right now, the things that you want? Are you willing to? And Jesus is saying, if you're not, then you can't be my disciple. This isn't easy stuff. This is hard for all of us. Me too. The second thing is that if Jesus is at the top, you're going to have to give up your feelings. Can I tell you how much I hate feelings? And
and you're probably already like, you're a cold, calculating to-do list kind of guy, so I know you don't like feelings. But I'm tired of people using their feelings as an excuse for disobedience. That will make me feel bad. I'm not sure that I'll feel good, and it won't make me happy. God never promised any of that. Obedience is obedience, and if it hurts, it might be because you're taking up your cross and following him. But let's get away from this feeling, well, God would never ask me to do that because it would make me feel bad. What? Where'd you get that? If you find it in the Bible, let's discuss it. But I can. This is what I can find in the Bible. In John chapter 16, Jesus is talking to his followers and says, I have told you these things so that in me you may... Oh, sorry, different translation. I have told you all this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth, you will have many trials and sorrows. It's going to be hard. It's going to feel bad. It might not make you happy. What about the joy of the Lord? The joy of the Lord is different, honestly, because you can go through a hard time and say, you know what, I can still praise God. That's not feelings. That's not happy. He says, I've told you this, you will have many trials and sorrows, but take heart. Because I have overcome this world. I have beaten this thing. It is game over. I have won. It's done. But understand that now it is going to be hard. It is going to make you sorrowful. If you are following Jesus and if your heart isn't broken by something because of following him, you're probably not really following him. And there's just so much. You just look around at your friends and your family, and I'm sure there are things where, like, I just wish God would do that. Or it breaks my heart that they're interested in this. Like, the issue is that it's not about how we feel. It's about obedience. And if you're waiting for God to make you feel like doing something hard, you're probably going to keep waiting. Because hard things are hard. Hurtful things hurt. And now, understand, I'm not saying, like, go out and intentionally hurt people. But are you willing to say, I'm willing to do this even though it might make me feel bad. It might hurt. It might be something that's going to make me uncomfortable. So that's what Jesus says when it comes to this idea of feelings. So if you want Jesus at the top, you might have to give up your wants, your feelings. You might have to give up your rights. And again, I am totally not trying to dive into the politics because I hate politics. And I've avoided on Facebook because there's so many people that I can probably grow closer to and share Jesus better with rather than me flaunting and airing out my grievances. But sometimes we need to be willing to give up our rights. We're Americans. We've got our rights. But if what our American rights say conflict with Jesus and his attitude, and I'm not, again, please don't say, oh, he's just talking about the refugee thing. I'm saying about everything. I'm saying about life. That's my property. You better not cross that line. Well, maybe you could do that and get your rights, and you'd be right. But then turn someone away that sees you're coming back from church on Sunday morning. Oh, you go to church. You're one of them. Okay. You can have your property line. You can have your rights. But what have we done in the process? So you might have to give up your rights, the things that belong to you. And Jesus is sharing another thing. He says, as they were walking along, someone said to Jesus, I will follow you wherever you go, Jesus. I'm going to follow you wherever you go. But Jesus replied, foxes have dens to live in and birds have nests. But the Son of Man has no place even to lay his head. He said, if you're going to follow me, you know what? We don't even have what wild animals have in terms of comfort. We don't even have. I don't even have. So are you really willing to give up everything? Are you really willing to follow me wherever you go? Because if you do, you're probably going to have to give up what you consider the rights of what you have, of what belongs to you. That's what he says. And then the fourth thing, if Jesus is at the top, and I love this. If Jesus is at the top of your to-do list, you're going to have to give up your goals. And it doesn't mean, again, none of this means like you hate yourself, you go out and kill yourself after this. That's not what we're talking about. To love Jesus more than your family doesn't mean you leave your spouse. And giving up your goals doesn't mean you don't have any. But when it comes to Jesus versus any of these things, who wins? Which box gets the check mark in it? And sometimes our goals, you know, what we want to accomplish, for ourselves, for our kids, for our jobs, our families, our houses, our community. I mean, frankly, good goals. Like, we would like to see this happen in Mifflin County as a church. But are we willing to give up what our goals are for the sake of following Jesus. And I love this passage because it's just, I don't know, it's comforting, maybe because I am weird. But Paul says to the church in Corinth, he says, "Do not deceive yourselves. If any of you think you are wise by the standards of this age, you should become fools so that you may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight." And Paul is saying here, look, you know, we have these goals. We think these are things that we're supposed to accomplish. And we talked about this the first week, too. You know, who are you listening to? Who are the voices that are feeding into your ears telling you these are the things you must achieve? Paul says, look, if what you're doing, if you're unbelieving friends, if the world around you is going, that's really weird, I don't think you should do that, you might be on the right track. Or you might just be weird, but you have to determine that. But the point being that when it comes to the things that we want to accomplish, our goals, Paul says, look, the wisdom of this world to God is foolishness. What? You guys are idiots. But foolishness to God is wisdom. And again, do you follow that? Sometimes doing things that are countercultural, sometimes doing things that make us stand out as odd, sometimes doing things that, and sacrificing our goals and what we should accomplish and the things we should have by this time in our life and our kids should have reached these milestones, sometimes those things, people are like, well, that's rather foolish. You mean you haven't put your kids into an Ivy League preschool program? I mean, they're in third grade after all. When are they going to grow into the knowledgeable people you want them to be? I mean, whatever. You know, but those are those moments where you're like, no, you know what? I'm okay with being a little foolish in the eyes of the world because I'm following what Jesus has called me to do. And that might mean giving up your goals. So these are the things you have to chew on. If Jesus is at the top, are you willing to give these things up? Are you willing to? And you have to be willing to. And again, none of those things mean you can't have wants, you can't have feelings, you can't have rights, you can't have goals. But when they come into conflict with what God's word says, in the conflict with what the Bible tells us, what is going to win? You might still have the Jesus box there, but you're checking off, get that promotion. Earn that extra money. Give up that time. Whatever. You might be checking off other things instead of following Jesus. And that is where the priority needs to be. So, the point being, pursuing Jesus is better than pursuing me. And again, this is the underlying thing about all this, that God knows what's best for you. If we just trust him, it might not be easy, it might not be fun, it might not be comfortable and feel good, but it's going to matter. It's going to be what counts because he is better than everything. He is better than it all. And so we have to be willing to do that. So the question that I want you to kind of chew on here is just, and we've asked questions each time, so I put some in here for you to think about. When it comes to your personal to-do list, what do you want or wish for? And these are just things for you to chew on. What are the things that you want? What are the things that you wish for? What do you hope will happen, will come to pass? Get a little King James on you. What are those things that you kind of hope for? And it doesn't mean that they're bad or they're wrong, but when we start to realize these are the things, they are priorities. Whether you want to admit them or not, the things that you want, the things that you wish for, they're priorities in your life. And there's nothing wrong with having priorities, but if Jesus comes into conflict with one of those wants or wishes, which one are you going to choose? That's what Jesus is talking about here. That's what it means to follow him. So what do you want? What do you wish? Another way, just another probing question to look into yourself here, is what's on your bank statement? I'd say your checkbook register, but we were just discussing a couple days ago, Kara and I, like people don't even use those things anymore. But if you look at your bank statement, and I'm not saying that your money is all to Jesus and to MC3. This is not the point. I'm not talking about church in terms of Mifflin County Community Church. I'm saying pursuing Jesus with everything you have. And when you look at your bank statement, and I'm not saying that all of it needs to be money to church or to good things. I'm saying those things that are on your bank statement are priorities to you. No, they're not. I don't have a priority for paying the electrical bill. Yes, you do. Because if you don't pay it, you have no electricity. So it is a priority. Well, it doesn't mean it's more. Just understand, your bank statement is a good tell of what is important to you. And again, those things aren't bad. It's good that you're paying your electric bill. It's good that you're eating food. But maybe the question on your bank statement is, you know what? We sure do eat a lot of food. Maybe that food is becoming a priority because we're going out to eat all the time. And maybe Jesus is getting less because we've got more food. I don't know. Maybe, yeah, look at that. Look how much money is going to our mortgage or our car payment. And that's okay. But if it's coming in conflict with Jesus, then you have an issue. Maybe your money is going into, I don't know, church. I don't know. Maybe you're giving too much to church. If that is too much of a priority over Jesus, and I don't know what that would look like, but maybe you're just doing it because, you know, oh, God will get me back. God's got my back. Or I'm really not doing well now, so if I give a lot to church, then I'll be okay then. Like, that's not the point either. So all I'm saying is your bank statement is a tell. It tells what's going on in your heart, what your priorities are. The third thing is, whose opinion matters? This is another tell. Who do you care what thinks that, who, yeah. What people do you care what they think about you? That's totally a horrible sentence. But you know, what people are on your mind? Like, what are they going to think? What are they going to think about this? Is that your friends? Is that your enemies? Is that your family? And there's nothing wrong with having those thoughts. I mean, unless they become obsessive and self-destructive. But that shows that there's a priority in that person or in that group of people. And if that obsession or that opinion of those by those people bothers you to the point where you're willing to do it, that group matters, that person matters, rather than what Jesus says, then you've got a problem. And you need to decide, is Jesus better than? Whose opinion matters to you? Who do you care what they think? And again, there's nothing wrong with caring what people think. But it could be turned into a wrong way. And then the last question, and this is a telling one too. What do you worry about? Because when you worry about something, that is a priority. Oh, no, it's actually because I don't have that. No, it's because you have made that a priority in your life because you're worrying about that. So these are things. Again, none of these are wrong. These are just ways to truly look inside and say, what are my priorities? What are the things that matter to me? The band is going to come up now. And I want you to kind of chew on these ideas of which of these things are priorities. You know, when you look at the things that you wish for, the things that you desire, when you look at your bank statement, when you look at the people that you are concerned about their opinion and what you worry about, all these things give us little hints of what our to-do list looks like, of what things get priority up there. And again, Jesus might still be at the top. He might not be. And if he's not, I would suggest that you put him on the top. But he might be there, but just you're having a hard time filling in that block because these other things keep taking priority over. And these are questions for you to consider and to chew on and say, which of these things are really becoming too big of a priority? As I said, you have a post-it note on your seat. And a lot of times we use something like this to tell, this is our to-do list. Make sure you get that done. Make sure you accomplish that. And as the band is, they're going to lead us through that song again, One Thing, which is just a cool song, just perfect for this series. You're welcome to stand and worship and sing along. You're also welcome and encouraged to maybe think through your own life and say, what has become the top priority in your life? I'm saying what you want it to be. Don't put Jesus down here. Because I don't think any of us can really say that Jesus is the most important thing in our life. We want him to be. And there's other things that get in the way of that. And so what I want you to do is just thinking through, what is the top of your to-do list right now? What is the thing that is keeping you from truly following Jesus wholeheartedly, making him your priority? Making him better than anything else that you're doing. And what I'd like you to do is, and again, this is just an attitude of quiet reflection. You're going to write that down on your piece of paper. And over there, we've got a giant post-it note with Jesus at the top. And I want you to take your post-it note quietly over there and put whatever it is that is too high on your list and put it under Jesus. Just symbolically, it doesn't fix everything, but hopefully it'll get us to reflect and think, you know what? Jesus needs to be the top of the list. Everything else needs to come second.
And so that's what I'd like you to do. Again, as the band is leading the song, you're welcome to sing, you're welcome to write, and just take some time, go up there, put your post-it note on that thing, come back, have a seat, and continue to sing with the band. But that's what I'd like you to do right now. And really reflect on, is Jesus the most important thing on your life? And when you put these things that are too high on your list on that wall, give it away. Be done with it. Stick it there and say, I'm done pursuing that because I want to pursue Jesus. God, we are grateful that there is nothing better than you, that there is nothing better than Jesus, and that you don't ask us for our obedience. You don't ask us for our total devotion because it's what you want, because you're being some sort of dictator or overlord, but because you truly are the best thing and that you died for us to demonstrate your love for us. And I pray for that wall. I pray for these things that we have placed there that have become priorities in our lives and really need to be placed under you, that you need to be the number one. Help us, God. And that's the cool thing. In the way that only you can, the way your Holy Spirit can, change us from the inside out to not just want you at the top of our to-do list, but to be able to check you off as the one that we have truly made the priority day in and day out. Help us to seek you, to follow you, to love you with everything that we have. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.